I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On this episode, I'm joined by two legends, two England legends, two good friends of mine. Well, I call them my friends anyway. It's the great Ben Youngs and George Cruz.
This is the Big Jim Show.
Give me a yeah.
Big Jim is wearing his heels, marching around the town to get some thrills. But it's time to go in now, and he's big and red. A shot of black coffee, now he's super dead. He gets lost, I'm a beer dick house. A shoulder of some whiskey, and he shoots it's like a ball.
Panicking, Cruzo.
It's because we got into about his weight.
Look, he's fasting.
He's fasting. He's eating like a monk, mate.
Are you fasting or not? Have you been fasting for 3 months?
3 years.
What's he been doing?
I haven't been to the gym in, like, I've done a couple of, like, I don't know, business bits in a gym, but I haven't been to the gym in 18 months.
What's the plan? Why? Because you are naturally
skinny.
I came
out and I said, you know what I want to look like now, Jim?
What, shredded?
Have you given up protein as well? It's cruising on the way. You look like cruising. Looks
I,
like,
I feel bad we're getting stuck into
it. No, we've got to get stuck
he
into
is
it.
Very skinny.
He is. Because I look at Jim.
I'm 100 kgs, mate.
Hang on, say it, man.
Like, big frame. You still have got a big frame out of him.
Big carcass.
I reckon it could chuck him in there, mate, and it'll maul and brawl still. Look at you, Cruiser. I don't know what happened to you. So I'm like, you look like someone that's just done a 30 day marathon and you're on the last leg.
Whilst fasting.
Yeah, whilst fasting.
The guy.
And he's got a mile
running,
to go.
Running Africa.
Yeah.
That lad.
You look, yeah, similar.
You same are, large, like, normally very skinny, though. Like, your pictures of you as a youngster and a teenager. And I remember when we were playing, you had to put on weight, as in trying to eat food to put on weight and muscle mass. But you were big at some point. In your prime, you were big.
No, look, I've lost definitely 3.5 stone. And I get
three and a half stone.
And people look at me who, like, maybe might know me, I don't know, a year or haven't seen me for, like, a year. And they look, they think maybe I'm Will, my brother.
Yeah, or ill.
Or ill.
Will or ill.
Yeah.
Will or ill.
Oh, that's what they're saying.
Do people walk,
ill.
To Cruz, do people walk down the street and double take, and then it's the schnoz that gives it away, and they think, no, it is him.
Big old,
it is him.
It's like, his whole body shrunk, but why is his nose still on his maxi protein?
I'm being arse.
You're not allowed to body shame.
You were like Farquhar, though. I remember in camp, you used 100%. To eat and eat and eat, and he was, and now he doesn't.
I can't believe. People say that about me as well. I've put on a bit of weight, but the first thing they would say is, oh, how much weight have you lost? You can't say it the other way
you've
around.
Put like, on weight.
I've put on weight now.
Well,
when I retired, I got, as you know, Cruzo, I was ill. I was fucked. I was on my back. Like, loads of issues after rugby, but I'm now fully on top of it. So, hey,
what are you wearing?
Razor sharp.
How good.
What are you wearing?
118, 119 kgs. Oh, it's a good weight.
And what were you? We were like 122, 23, weren't you?
I was in my prime, 124, against India with a hat-trick. I was at 138.
You played India?
What do you mean I played India? You know I played India. Scored a hat-trick back in the day. I know you watched it.
He didn't just play India. He dominated India.
Yes. So when I was at Leicester and big on the the piss and whatever and young, I got up to about 135, 138.
But you got into that? Did you get to that heavy?
That was the heaviest of the heaviest.
Imagine that's if you mad, were French, mate. They would have loved you.
Well, they did.
In fact, they'd want another 10 kilos on you, right?
Well, that was the
for
thing.
For 1 year. They didn't love you that much.
Well, no, I had a 3-year deal. But I remember when I turned up to Montpellier and I went from Gloucester I was around 126 at Gloucester and thought, I'm going to go to Montpellier, like trim down on the beach. Trim loads down. Of photos. Going to trim down, get fit.
Turn up.
Big money. Big money. And then I got there and they wouldn't let me play because I wasn't big enough. They were like, no, you need to put on more weight. So they were like feeding me cereal every morning. True story.
That's madness.
Under Fabien Galthié.
Feeding you cereal every morning, that's not unheard of, you know?
But it's also, as you know, that ain't putting on weight, is it? Like,
no,
you're not
true,
like crazy people there. But yeah, I am never felt better than now.
I fully agree.
Yeah. How you're 33. You're retired young, eh?
Yeah, 33. Mm-hmm. Are you younger?
34 now.
Mm. So
how many you got?
I've got one more season left. Yeah. And then we'll see. We'll see whether that's it. Or
I'm looking forward.
Whatever.
We'll be sat here in 2 years' time, and it'll be looked round at this table. I'm looking forward to seeing how you turn out after me. We go. Is that feeling all right, mate?
You've lost weight, and I know which way I'm heading. Yeah. This.
I'm leaving bowls of food, young as I am, in the corner.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at my genetics in terms of the family, and look, and it. Yeah, I think it's safe to say that I will be.
Mm.
I'll have plenty of reserves.
I saw your brother.
Should we put a date in the diary?
Yeah, let's do a reunion. They'll be like, you know how they go to you? Like, surely that's not cruising. They'll go, surely that's not Ben Yates. He's taller if he lays on his side. What's happened to him?
Comfort zone. That's why. Yeah. Whereas Crusoe's not. He's, you know.
Grafting.
Doing yoga, mate. Too much yoga.
Why? What is this?
I don't know. I've always thought. Just. I've had 8 epidurals, and, you know, long back. Just want stuff to make your body feel good, don't you?
Mm. So we'll start on that, Crusoe, because you are young, 33 still. So you're the youngest here in the studio by some distance.
Well, you're 33?
Yeah.
He's 33.
You did just say that, didn't you? And I just sort of like brushed it off because I thought, no, it's not. But you are. You're right.
I'm 34 this month, so.
You could easily, well, you couldn't right now, but if he put on weight, right?
Especially Jim, if it's windy.
He could come back.
Especially if it's windy.
He could be the comeback of all comebacks.
The most sought-after position, second row. You know that as well, Crusoe. You're in Japan, and then you've thrown the towel in way too early, but I didn't realise you had that many epidural. Was it the back that was giving you the stick for you to quit?
I just have stuff in life to do, I think. Like, that is a...
You just had enough?
I hadn't had enough, genuinely. I hadn't had enough. There's just more stuff. I figured out there's more stuff to do. That I wanted to fit in, and like, if you want to fit stuff in, and you play rugby for 14, 15 years, you start to run out of time to do other stuff. So, and like a genuine decent opportunity with the business, and you can continue to play, you continue like go down, sort of get worse and worse, you know.
My route.
You pointed at me.
You're 100% right.
No, he was glancing over at me as well.
Was he?
Go on, Cruiser.
I'm trying to capture the audience. And look, there was a good opportunity, and like your body is, like it goes through the ringer a bit.
A bit,
yeah.
And how many epidurals?
Probably at 7 or 8, and then I had 3. My left ankle was giving me a bit of an issue as well. And you know, it's just consistent, like low to medium level pain is a bit annoying after, you know, 3, 4, 5 years.
I know.
You know, yeah.
So that was why. So it was the pain, and you just so,
pain and but, pain and genuine business, like good opportunity with business. That is. Oh, I see it.
They're so young, so you've got no pain, you've got no business interests. He's still going.
I'm still going, mate. I don't know how you lads do it. I don't. Like the forwards, you
it
take an
mad.
Absolute battering. And I'm not you know, when you scrum half, it all happens in front of you, right? The rucks, the mauling and all that. And you look at some of it and you think, oh my God, how has he got up from that?
Well,
how's he gone and back in for more?
Coley. Just never ending. His neck.
You know what it is? You know when like... when you stop, right?
Yeah.
You know when you actually stop, like the off season, you stop. I just had a week off, and like you actually feel horrendous from stopping. So Coley should never stop. You just got to keep going.
Keep the train going
and going. Yeah, don't stop. Because if he does, I think he'd be dust.
Hey, they've got a podcast now come out called For the Love of Rugby. That's how much they love it.
I know. So I sent in a dirty pair of boxers, hoping Coley would sign them for me, but I've got nothing back yet.
You want another pair in return, don't you?
I want Coley's. I miss that smell behind his shoulder. Oh, man. It was,
locking down.
It was something else.
It's so funny, though, because I've got one picture up on my wall of playing, and it's of Leicester. So it's only of Leicester, like where it all started. And Youngsy's in there, he's about 14, 15 years old. Coley's there.
Yeah.
And maybe different for you, because you're scrum half and you were a young kid when you were there, but I'm watching Coley. I know he looks 45. He does look a lot older, doesn't he? But how he's still going in the position he's in,
and the level
amount
as
of
well,
games,
you know?
The amount of cash he's made. Like, I'm thinking, how? Yeah. Is he? Because he can, and this is with all due respect, he's still doing a job.
Mm.
And that's respectful because of the position that he's in, right? You need lads in that position, tight head, to do a job, right? Doing a job at tight head is significantly better than it sounds, because it's a tough position. Is his body all right?
I think he would say it's It's not great. But as you say, you do a job, right? I mean, tight head is...
Wait, he's an international athlete.
It's a tight head, right? There's not many people signing up for the job, yeah. Is it? Let's be honest. Yeah, phenomenal, really, to be fair, because scrum at test level is so important, and he can lock it down, and he can do some damage. So what do you roll on? 20 minutes at the weekend? Yeah. So get him out there, you know, shove the loose fair head over top of the locks.
Fair play to him. I love the fact that he's still going. And that's, again... Cruiser, you're obviously 3.5 stone lighter, but I'm just reckon you had a couple of more years at the top, tap end.
Did you fall out of love with it, Cruiser? Did you, Jim? Did you fall out of love with it? Did you just know? Were you like, I'm done?
I didn't fall out of love with it. I got pissed off with everyone and everything around me. I started to blame other people for the demise of my, not performances. I had a lot going on. Like, you go in this transition period. Mm. Which meant something very different back then, but like, as in transitioning and out, and like similar to Crusoe, with your body, like the little niggles and stuff like that, ankle, back, neck. The one point for me, as I was playing against Newcastle Crusoe, I was in Dubai on holiday at the time, but I was up in Newcastle playing, and Olmsted, the bearded, long haired Canadian,
massive,
second row. So I'm just literally kicks gone up in the air, and I'm.
is your back?
I'm cradling. No, this isn't the back. This isn't the Harlequins. That's the Quins. I'm cradling back, but I'm just looking at the ball. I'm nowhere near the ball. And he runs behind me, and just. I thought he's fucking smashed me from behind. And my neck's gone back. And I've shaking on the floor. So both my hands and my feet are shaking. So Barnsley's ref, and he thought I'd dislocate my shoulder. And they come on. But I pinched a nerve in my neck. And I watched the video back. And mate, he's pushed me, as in mildly, in the back. And my head's gone back. And that was the point where I was like, mercy. I'm done.
What am I doing?
Yeah, just tapping.
I'm done. But I finished. My body was an absolute wreck. Like I mentioned, this thyroid disease. Because you were laughing.
Yeah, we were laughing. Turns out you're about to die.
Yeah. Did you know about that?
No, go on.
So, European Cup final up in Edinburgh, a place where there wasn't a huge amount of glory. Who were we playing? Racing or was it Clermont?
Clermont.
2016, 2017?
No, later. 18, maybe?
It might have been 2017.
Yeah,
details. But I come on for 2 minutes, game's won. And obviously, after a big win, you go out, get smashed. We had Exeter the following week. And the lead up to that last 2 or 3 weeks, I've been feeling a bit shit and stuff like that. Was sick in one of the matches before. Anyway, we've won the match, gone out, jam house in Edinburgh. Me and Kelly are on stage, Mustang Sally, smoking cigars, smoking cigarettes, drinking. Next day, well, the missus had come up from London, pregnant with the twins, absolutely massive, belly button busting out everywhere. And I'm getting back into bed at 4 in the morning. Can't get out of bed. You know, it's like the next day after you've won something, it doesn't matter. You're up, you're out, you're ready to go again.
Jim had a hangover.
Basically, the hangover from hell. That's what Beck thought. And then I thought, I must have food poisoning. I literally couldn't move. Then got on the train, and all the lads are celebrating the Champions Cups there. And I'm lying on the train, like shaking. Like, all these are just pissing
themselves. Mate, you got loads of sympathy as well.
Yeah,
everyone was like, are you right there, Jim? Yeah.
The last scene of me.
Well, Jim knows how to party.
I know,
he knows how to have a good time. And that's the thing. So I think lads were like, what the hell's gotten into you?
And then the last. So that my last moment as a Saracens player or as a professional rugby player was being driven out of the training car park in the back of a Ford Mondeo. And everyone
people hurling saurians at him.
Scotland captain, eh? Scotland vice captain. Leader of men. That was it. So
it just shows no one ever really gets a send off they deserve or they want, do they? I mean, you've just won Europe, but it ends with the back of a Mondeo.
Yeah. Tough old sport.
Head sticking out the boot.
Yeah. With a drip.
Literally, it was that. It was that. And then I went through 2 years of absolute hell of trying to get right. But it is a tough old sport, eh?
Yeah.
Like, ridiculous in terms of what you put your body through. And you don't realise, like, now, and this is why, like, the stuff that I did at the World Cup, like, being pitched, like, the way that I talk about the game and the gladiatorial aspect and, you know, trying to sensationalise the physicality, which it isn't, like, you lads know better than me. It's the craziest sport in the world, on the planet, because if you marry everything up with like what you put your bodies through, what we've put our bodies through, how often you have to do that week on week, the amount of training, and then you marry that up with how much you get paid, and Youngs, you might have made millions, it's still, but it's not enough.
No,
it's not enough. I just don't think it's enough, and we're lucky, we're three of the lucky ones, because we got to the pinnacle, you know, played in World Cups, played in big games, made decent money. But you think about where rugby is now, I will keep pushing for the lads that are going out there fucking doing it, because it's the craziest sport. I watched the World Cup, South Africa, All Blacks, the France-South Africa game, Ireland, New Zealand, and as you know, like everyone's speaking about, I have never seen physicality like it. And I'm like, these a million-pound, multi-million-pound athletes, visually, aesthetically to look at, and that's what they should be getting paid. So I'm all over lads getting as much as they can.
Yeah, I think there's not only the physical part of it, you know, I that's not something that obviously I've had to mix with physically because I'm not.
Oh, you
player.
Have, mate. You played
no,
it
down. It's the
but
mental. It's the mental side. Mm. So from a halfback's point of view, you the amount of and I suppose line out calling as well. But you know, it's the tactical stuff throughout the week and the grind of like analysis and how you break them down. What do you need to do? Do you need to get to players? What you're going to call in this situation? How do you make decisions? You know, suddenly there's a yellow card, there's a red card, you lose a player. Like, it's the mental side as well, because they just keep coming and coming and coming. And now I've stepped away from Test rugby, you actually realise they get it even harder. So you're right, Jim. Like, those lads, like, they don't stop. Like, they don't stop. Obviously, the league's now taking a little break, sabbatical, until they come back. So they're literally going to be on the grind for 8 weeks and then straight back into it. And
what's your schedule over
the
next?
It's just mad.
4 or 5 weeks.
Essentially, we're doing like another little pre-season, really.
Yeah, that's. I mean,
that's what it is, and we need that. Like, it was crying out. Like, we were, you know, there were some broken bodies that needed patching up, and they will get to do that for the next 8 weeks. But the other lads, they don't have that luxury. Mm. They England need them, or Scotland, or Wales, whoever need them. Mm. And then as soon as they come back, clubs like, brilliant, we've got you back. Out you go again. So you're right, Jim. I just think that the more they're elite athletes that put themselves through hell. Really, physically and mentally, that you'd hate to see them. You'd hate to see it not keep evolving and trying to bring in a better income for those guys that are on the absolute grind.
Yeah, I see. And like, NFL is an easy one, right, to talk about, because highest paid athletes, most viewed commercially, very viable, but also a contact sport. But I just look at how they do it now: the two conferences, less games, jeopardy on every match, and the hysteria around every single game. When I look at rugby now, it's kind of just everything folds into one, doesn't it? So you've got Prem, and then it goes into the Champions Cup, and then you've got the Six Nations, and then before it's like the Prem was still being played during that, and then you're back into the Prem and the URC and then the Champions Cup, and then it's just so fragmented that you've got the internationals in there. It has to get to a stage, I think, where you've got, like, it's compartmentalised and it's just clear. So you've got a premiership window with a URC window, you've got an international window, you've got a Champions Cup window, then an international window, and then you could have like a Super Cup at the end, which they were talking about, where you could have the best of the best globally playing. I just think commercially makes sense. As players, you'll play, right, okay, we've got 10 games, or whatever it is, 9 games in the Prem at the start, then you've got a mini pre-season, or you have a few weeks off, then the internationals go and play in the internationals, and then you could have friendlies and stuff like that for the club players, and then you go into the Six Nations, like the internationals, and then you go into a massive Champions Cup tournament, and everything's gearing towards that, as in all eyes are on that one tournament. Because if you're a casual fan, I struggle. Like, I have to go on the fixture list.
It's quite bitty, isn't it?
I can't even work it out myself. Yeah. Like, I know that the Champions Cup is in the round of 16s in April, and then there's a break, then there's a Prem, and then there's another Champions Cup game, and then it's just crazy how you just jump in from different tournament to tournament on different channels. Anyway, we've spoken about it loads.
No, I totally agree though, Jim. Like, for someone that's still in it, is you look at Premier League football, right? It has a start and a finish, and it has drama throughout, but it all comes down to a big finish, right? Mm. Rugby, it's start, little break, goes away, Test rugby, there's autumn, come back, bit of Europe, stop from Europe, back to Prem. Like, it's all just, you can't keep up with it. And even Six Nations, it's 8 weeks, right? So your casual viewers that engage in rugby just for this one tournament, it goes 2 games, weekend off, 1 game, weekend off. It's like, can we get into it? Do you know what I mean? Like, make it into like 5 weeks, bang it out, and then give the guys a couple of weeks off after.
You're talking about putting stress on body. Five international games in a row like that. I mean, I know you do it in the World Cup.
Autumn's 4 in a row, mate.
Yeah, but
World Cup's thing. And I think on the back of it, you get better viewings. I think you get more of a drama to it. So
would it be a lot, Caruso, if there was no other game? Do you know what I mean? As in proper rest. So
yeah, definitely. If there's like, you just need more More rest. Like, I remember, like, we're going to do like 30, 33, 34 games in a season.
Yeah.
And they were all, because we were at Sarri's in a time where we were winning, they were all big games. Like, that was hellish. But I feel like they've got a mix now. They've got three or four less teams, which is obviously horrendous, but gives the upside of having a bit of break in season. It's mainly the internationals they've got to look after. I think they've always, it's always been a push for them, especially being a forward or so in that sort of setup. It's always been a push, but like, how, you can't ever rely on everything, because there's too many governing bodies, or there's too many, you know, the world rugby's sort of across too many different time zones and different, you know, like seasons and so on. So the end result eventually, I'm sure, will be some sort of alignment across the world rugby to have some sort of super spectacle at the end or something. But a long way off that at the moment.
Everyone wants their piece to be really, really good without sharing it or working.
Yeah.
I suppose. Like, with a bit of cohesion to try and go, right, actually, for the better cause of the game and for the better, I suppose, success of the global game, it's let's get some alignment. But it's very much, no, we do this and we're not prepared to budget. No, we do this and we're not prepared. I mean, you look at the European fixtures, like, essentially, it's about five rematches. So we're playing Leinster again, which we had in the pool stages. If we were to overcome Leinster, then we play La Rochelle Stormers, who we also played in the pool stage. I just don't know, like, it's... And I think people... Like you say, Jim, can't keep up with it. And then just confused by the whole situation. Do you know what I mean?
Not that I'm a smart man, but I should be across it. And like, if we're struggling to break it down.
But European Cup as a... It's called Champions Cup?
It is now the South African team. Well, it's called the EPCR, but it's Champions Cup. The Investec Champions Cup.
That's some tournament.
It's an amazing... As in good, amazing.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Do you think the South African teams have made it better?
Yeah, why not? I mean... Like, they've added to it, I'd say. I know that the lads enjoy like a little bit of break going out there. So from a player's perspective, I think that's quite different. You know, you want a bit of difference. But yeah, I just think it's such a, like, you know, coming into the quarters, semis, finals of those sort of competitions, they are proper teams. They're verging on international teams.
But it's getting there, like, because the games, and this is comes back to the initial thing, like, because there's such jeopardy and the games are so big, and I'm not saying that a game in the Prem or the URC isn't as big, but I think we need more of them big moments, and we've played in them big games. Like, they're unbelievable, aren't they?
Yeah.
Especially like a team like Leicester, where it, like, rugby and football now, but that is the city, like, it's sport, and it is that tribalism of football and like the NFL, like the NBA. You see them, but there's just so much. But to get to the point of the round of 16 now, but the quarters, the semis, the finals, that are like that international standard of the Six Nations. It's we need to try and find a quicker route and a clearer route where fans and a commercial model and TV and all that can align, so we can get paid millions. Right.
The best,
so we can get paid.
The best,
you're retired.
Not me. I know.
The best games have consequences, right? So, you know, the Premiership is extremely competitive right now with 10 teams, but there's no relegation. Like, imagine you put one in there. And I'm not saying it's right, because I know clubs have been struggling, but, you know, I just think the best, like, when you watch rugby at its best, it's consequence. This weekend, consequence in all the games. You know, you don't win, you don't pick up a bonus point. Like, I thought Scotland are probably kicking themselves not getting a bonus point right at the end of the game.
Ah, we won.
You won, but you're thinking, right? You know,
100%.
Like, because you never know. Yeah. Like, that could come down to, you know, Scotland got some good
pitches
at home.
And it probably will for us.
And you just don't know. But, like, all these, you want games, you know, to captivate you because there's consequences to it. And I'm not sure there always is. So, therefore, it kind of, do you know what I mean? But... That's my 10 pence anyway.
Well, that's it. Say no more. Cruzo, how's everything else then? Good?
Good, yeah. I've got nothing to complain about. I know, I'm fortunate to have something that I actually care about.
Which is rugby. What?
Mate, let's. Which is business, talk about it. I'm not an out-and-out salesman, but I've got a company, 4-5. We do vitamins, hydration tablets, CBD, functional mushrooms, all sort of progressive. Coined as game-changing wellness. There you go.
That's the tagline. Yeah. I love, because I'm pointing it at you when you went third on CBD, because I thought that was first. I thought it was CBD first, but you hit
we're just
the mainstream vitamins
and
all that.
Yeah, just mixing it about, you know. But mate, good. Like, yeah, we've got... Like, we finished rugby and it is a hell of a change, but I feel like we've got our own team with 7 or 8 of us. We're, you know, there's all the things that you can transfer from rugby. I think we're really trying to put through into a business perspective, but also just enjoy it, because like, there's so, like, you do a career in something for so long and you dedicate loads to it. I feel like the next thing post rugby, you always like you really want that to be enjoyable, and I think we've managed to have that, which is like the biggest thing is go real deep here. You just want happiness, don't you, and sort of enjoyment in your workplace.
Yeah, mate, I love the humility. Doesn't want to go too much into it, mate.
He's done unbelievably well.
You've done unbelievably well.
He's been very modest.
This is why, 100%, mate. Yeah. The audience that listens to this, like the 2 million every episode, they're our age.
2 million, bloody hell.
Yeah, it might not be that, mate. But from my perspective, and again, we touched on at the beginning, the operations that you've had, what you put your body through, we can say it, you know, the dark arts of behind, but the painkillers that you have to take, all the different supplements that you have to take, you've got no idea what's in them. Like, all causes a bit of drama within the guts, right? Like, when you retire. So, 4-5, set up when you were at Saracens with Dom Day.
Yeah.
It was CBD-led. I've had some. I'm not 100% sure what direction the CBD will go, but it's about wellness, right? And the right nutrition. And it's kind of targeted at everyone. Like, because everyone now is looking for better health and... You know,
I think like in our careers, definitely looking for like longevity of career, so recovery, sleep, all those sort of things. And now I think since, I guess, we've gone from like a pitch to more boardroom setups, now it's like a lot of our products are focused on, you know, how we can sleep better, how we can focus better, how we can like have a healthier sort of body in general. So that transition has sort of followed from sport into business, which I think a lot of people are looking at, you know, especially people who want to be high performing, looking at how they can focus better in their working environment, how they can achieve more and so on. So I think that's like the thread that sort of threw us. But yeah, we're in Holland Barrett, we're in Boots. We've had some really interesting retailer conversations this month. And yeah, just like ploughing on in, really. I think we've got a really nice thing at the moment for a lot of probably grassroots listeners out there. We're doing over the Six Nations period. If you buy any one of our vitamins, we'll also gift one to a grassroots club. So So essentially, if you want to help your club out, help us out.
Yeah, 4-5. Nice. And what vitamins are they? So you've got let's talk about all of them. So
the base level of what we would have taken as players. So really looked at biotics, fish oils, male, female multivitamins. You more female.
Yeah, I take that. You take hormone female. Disease.
Okay, yeah, true. Thyroid. More vitamin D and vit C. And really just looked at, like, we got a couple of nutritionists who are investors and looked at, like, actually what we're taking, whether hard plastic-coated tablets, which don't dissolve as well, and across the board, just really not trying to reinvent the wheel, just make a better quality, more bioavailable product that actually absorbs into your body and works. So on the vitamin side... all Informed Sport tested, so products that we'd be taking. I think you guys at Leicester have
ours? We do, mate. And I think everyone now just wants it instantly. Like, if you know that something's going to make you feel better or sleep better or be more focused, it's like, it's just the way that we all are. Like, you order something online now, it comes to pass on the next day, doesn't it? Like, you want, right, how do I sleep better? Right, take this, boom, convenience, exactly. Yeah, yeah. People don't want to be, I don't know, brewing a drink, you know, and got to have it 10 minutes. You know, they just want to, boom, 2 drops on the tongue or take a tablet and whatever. They just want that instant stuff. And I think that's the way the world is now. It's just, can they get it instantly? And you know, you're providing that service, mate. And yeah, we do use your supplements. Very good, George. They're very good. I always wonder, how do they actually even make probiotics or an actual vitamin? Like, how do you actually make, how do you source the actual vitamin D?
So like, powder form. Now we're
digging. And then put it in things. Because
vitamin D, we get
ours. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Ours is a vegan vitamin D. So it comes from algae.
Right.
I don't know.
No.
Like you're gonna, like, I don't know. There'll be some sort of, I'll go off on something I have no idea.
No, please do it. I want to hear it. It's good. Let's just make shit up.
Because that is always interesting, right? You take this tablet and you think, that's pure vitamin D, lovely. And you think, how on earth do they even get it to that powder form into a little capsule? And how did it even, what was it before that? Yeah. And how do they make it to that?
No idea. For chemists, much smarter than us. Okay. We don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. But with the CBD stuff, it seemed like there was this big push for it. And do I call it a fad? I don't know what we call it. That might sound too bad. But where's the CBD space now? I mean,
there was a lot of hype around it, wasn't there?
A lot of hype as opposed to a fad. That's not what I'm saying. But you don't hear about it as much.
Yeah. It is a huge market. And you've seen customer feedback. It's like very important for some people. And I feel... It definitely had a lot of hype. I think from our perspective, just trying to make an efficacious product, trying to make, like, not overhype the marketing side of it and just have a product that, you know, for sleep, for recovery. And I think, the market is still massive. And I still think it's got a long way to go in terms of development. I think there's a process called novel foods, which means you got to be part of like application processes and so on. So that's kind of stunted the, I guess, innovation within CBD at the moment. But there's like that process is clearly good for, you know, so you don't have rogue traders and all that on the market.
Yeah. What is CBD then? Just a headline? Because
it's a cannabinoid. So it's like there are, so say in a cannabis plant, there are something like 100 plus, 110 different cannabinoids. THC is a cannabinoid. That's the one that gives you a high, effectively, a psychoactive. CBD is just another one of those cannabinoids that's been extracted. And then within your body is an endocannabinoid system already, which they don't know like huge amounts about. Like it's fairly recent, like sort of 40, 50 years sort of discovered. But like your immune or bowel, or like those sort of systems, CBD interacts with that and basically balances that and tops it up.
Yeah. Because, I mean, this is the thing, right? As in, I don't know how many painkillers you'd have to take in the position that you play, Youngsy, but I was living on them by the end, and I reckon that was the trigger. I know we were joking about it, I've spoken about it before, that triggered the thyroid, triggered gut issues, the lot, and trying to reprogram the body afterwards as well. Like,
people now, I've seen like huge amounts of just people want a more natural lifestyle. They want a bit more... you know, like cleaner products. But they also care so much about their health. Like you look at the youth coming through compared to, you know, what they're doing. Say even in like Sarri's Academy or in the academies, like they're not going out and getting absolutely smashed on any weekend off or game weekends when you can. And like that would have been completely different to what you and sort of us as well within our time. But they're more interested in like, you know, different biohacking and sort of ways in which they can feel better and wake up on a Sunday and feel great rather than going out and getting tanked up.
Oh, they were the days, eh?
They were good. They were great days.
Yeah, but you're 100% right. Yeah. You cannot do that now. And this is what, like, you see after the internationals and stuff, like, you'd have a big function. You know, if it was a new cap, they'd be getting 15, 23 drinks bought for them the whole time and you're just absolutely bollocks. But it's just near on impossible. You can't watch... or you can't play a game. I watch it now. You're like, there is no chance.
Yeah.
You can go and do that and try and rock up next week.
Yeah.
Just impossible at all.
No, I agree. It's sort of the days of those post-match function, like you say, Jim, and lads getting absolutely trolleyed. It just doesn't seem to happen anymore. Because you're then flirting with days until you feel right again and you just can't do it. You can't do it because even the demand of training's high. So it's sort of... So like you say, Cruiser, what you're doing is creating products for people to take, get better sleep, get better recovery. Because sleep, how did you sleep after games?
That's horrendous. Well, that's why I had to have a pint.
Shocking. Some lads literally just can't sleep. They cannot turn off. Which is almost unsurprising because of the enormity of the day and the adrenaline, the amount of caffeine you take in, atmosphere and everything like that. You know, and
chewing gum.
Yeah, exactly.
100
but like,
and having three of them.
You know, if you can get, like, you know, if you're someone that doesn't sleep, you know it's important, but you know, can have a product suddenly that actually gets you to that place, you get a decent night's sleep, like, you're going to take it.
Of course, like the caffeine stuff, I was with Stephen Kitsoff, Get Your Kits Off, over in Dublin, and they're all into these Nordics now.
Nice guy.
They put lovely guy. A lot of the South Africans are nice, aren't they? Once you break down the African barrier, they're all nice lads, but they're all knocking about. We've seen these Nordics, like these...
Snus, whatever
it's, I don't know what it's called.
Have you had one?
I had one before and nearly had a whitey. My mate had some. Big shout out to Craig at Revere. He gave me one at a pub. I hadn't been out in ages. And I'm literally... I fucking. I had surgery 3 days before, and I was like, he said, have you tried one of these? It'll make you feel like better. I was like, all right, it's a bit of caffeine, put it in, and literally I'm outside the pub spewing, having a whitey. But it was medication from that. But they're all on these Nordics, and he had these like ones called Serbians. And he's like, have you ever had one before?
The I was red
like,
ones,
no. He's like,
killers.
And then Matt Hansen was like, mate, if you've not had one before, do not fucking have a Serbian Nordic and then get up on stage.
I'd love to see that.
Absolutely mental. Yeah. But it's, yeah. But what else is happening then? Cruz, I'm going to stick with you. So you're doing that?
Doing that. Doing some consultancy with England. Been doing that for last Six Nations.
I'm doing some consultancy. You coaching? Are you still?
Not coaching. Like line out analysis, basically.
Yeah.
Like looking at. I think obviously Steve's a busy man, and I think probably the relationship I'd had with Maro, who has been calling the line out, probably just like slot in and sort of, yeah, a bit of analysis. I'd look at. I'd do a bit of a study of them, present sort of what I'm seeing and. Yeah, it's fairly hands-off, but it's cool. It's really nice. It's like seeing, you know, obviously in the World Cup, get to see a good bit of you guys and seeing a lot of the players which sort of, maybe because I did retire a couple of years early, still pushing through on that side and sort of maybe having their last couple of years. So, yeah, so kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out of rugby. Works quite nicely, I'd say, on both sides.
Yeah. Nice having him when he comes in.
Well, I'm done now, Jim.
Yeah, I know.
But when he came in, it was nice. That was nice.
It's good, huh?
I mean, I had a lot of free time during the World Cup, so I was just hovering about most of the time anyway. So, it was not always good to see Crozo. And I think, as Cruz said, like you build bonds and friendships anyway. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of sort of our group, Cruz, you know, there's not many left, really. Do you know what I mean? It's you're looking at the squad and you're thinking, yeah, there's a couple still in there now. Will they make the next one? I don't know. You know, you can't write off anyone. And I'm certainly not gonna suggest that they can't. But it is like, you know, there's another one goes and another one retires and another one, you know, whatever, maybe doesn't get picked. And you can sort of see that core group that we had some great years together playing is slowly sort of, you know, but that's the transition of a team, right? Yeah. That's only natural.
And like, there's always someone who felt like, I always think, I don't know, when I leave in Saris, and there were like others maybe who left before us, or like, and you always think, oh, you're not going to be able to replace him, but someone else comes in, you're always like a young guy. And I think I was in camp last night, that like you see the energy and you see these young guys and they're fucking massive as well. Mm. And like they're decent players and you see them performing on the weekend and, it's just life rolls on, doesn't it? It does. It's nice. There's a nice thing about that.
Yeah, but they're younger as well. Like the big difference. Young, I was looking at Monticello for Italy. I was like, oh, what's he? 25, 20? It's 21.
Yeah.
21 years old. I'm thinking, he's a monster.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then with your retirement, Youngsy, was that you? Were you pushed out? I mean, most cap players who have ever done it, one of the best players who have ever done it. Like, how does that work in your
mind?
Some
career, mate.
Thank you, mate. Thank you, lads. Do you know what? I just was always really clear about... I played the autumn in 2022. And I nearly, at the end of that autumn, was like, I'm done. Like, I nearly...
Why?
I was just maybe not enjoying it to the level that I should, you know, like, and I never felt like that, but I did the autumn and we'd played, I think we'd lost to Argentina, we'd drew in New Zealand and then we'd lost to South Africa quite convincingly. And I kind of came away from it and I was thinking, you know, am I still doing this for the right reasons? And, you know, I had a bit of a reflection. Then obviously things changed and then did the Six Nations, which I didn't, I played one game in Six Nations. So I kind of was then back at the club and all that. And it was, and then the World Cup was sort of in sight and, you know, you then get picked in the training squad. So obviously went for it. So, but I was always very clear that even after that autumn, where I had a bit of a like, oh, you know, we're a year away. Can I make it? Have I got it in me? And all that. And then once I sort of like reflected, kind of a week away from camp, because camps can be intense and it's grind and you come away and you think, okay, actually, I think clearly now. I just always felt like, Jim, like regardless of what happened to the World Cup, like that was going to be it for me. Like, and Courtney was the same and Johnny May was the same. And you didn't know whether you were going to go or not. So if you didn't, it just would have just ended, you know. I would have just, well, I wouldn't have had to call time on it because it would have been called for me. But I was always very, very clear. And then that last week, Steve obviously told me that I'd be playing. And then I told him then, informed him. She said, oh, thanks, Steve. Looking forward to it. But just to let you know, I won't be playing again. And, you know, I'll be retiring after this game. And
and then we just had a brief little conversation, which was nice. And yeah, like I said, I didn't want to tell anyone before that. I just wanted to, like, a couple of people knew. I spoke to Kevin Sinfield about it and Allard Walters and a couple of my teammates, but by and large, I just kept it sort of, you know what I mean? And then, yeah. But it was nice because I was very, very clear, probably like you, Cruiser, like being able to call time, you know, and it was definitely the right thing, Jim. I couldn't say, like, you know, that, you know, when's the right time, but for me, it felt right and I was really content with that. And I feel, you know, watching now as a fan, I enjoyed it. I didn't feel any, like, oh, I wish I was out there, or, you know, like,
nothing. Bitterness. You get a lot of lads who will retire and they're pissed off and they want the team to lose. And we've had chats with people, you know, when you've been dropped or whatever, and it's like, oh, I want the team to win. No, you fucking don't.
There's something really quite peaceful about calling it on your terms, right?
Mm.
And as you said, like, you know, driving away in the Mondeo. Like, do you know what I mean? You knew, but you thought you had one more game left, right? Mm. And you didn't. So, do you know what I mean? Oh, I'm happy. I was happy. And now just do the club stuff.
Yeah. Have you had time to reflect on it? Because, so what was it? What cap did you finish
127.
On? 127.
That's mad, mate. That's a lot of days at Penny Hill.
Yeah.
It's a lot of days.
Have you calculated how many in a hotel? It's like, it span into years, right?
We did. Actually, funny enough, on Monty Coley's For the Love of Rugby, we did calculate, and over 3 years I spent at Penny Hill Park. And then we worked out what we cost the RFU.
I love that.
Half a mil, 500 grand each on room bills.
Worst investment ever.
And that didn't include the club sandwiches either, so I think it's about 600.
The club sandwich you got to sneak through other people.
No, thanks. I say, it's just, it was nice being able to walk away and do that and come in the third playoff, coming with a bronze medal, which was, you know, we had a good route and it worked out how it worked out. I'm never going to shun that. That was, you know, nice to finish with a medal and to finish up internationally with that was great.
Yeah, well, the route's the route, right? Everyone talks about the World Cup route. Like, you, it is, as players, what can you do? Yeah.
Well, 2015, we had a horrendous pool, the pool of death, and didn't get out. 2019 wasn't much better, the pool, and then we had the Aussies in the quarters, and then New Zealand in the semis, and stuff. So, like, we had a terrible route. That's why almost I tip my hat to Africa more than ever with this occasion, because their pool was the pool of death.
Mm.
Then the quarterfinals, the set, like, to win it how they did.
I know 3 one-pointers. That's
mental.
But it's crazy, right? It's great. They're the margins, but it's just, you think, wow, like, you've done it the hardest way.
Yeah, that semi-final was unbelievable.
Mm.
Unbelievable.
The England one?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it could have gone the other way.
Just how comfortable you were in the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That
great
was the
buy
thing.
Into a plan.
And a plan that had been rinsed by everyone in how you play. And I actually said before the game, I was like, I'm telling you now, England can win this game. Like, the way that they play, the game plan that they've had throughout the World Cup, where the fans have been booing and people have been talking about it, this is the plan that can beat South Africa and the makeup of your team. It was class.
What was so great was the plan was extremely, I suppose it's not simple, but it is very simple. It was minimum rucks. It was, you know, ball goes in the air, like, don't give them much to hit. And it was, you could buy into it quickly. And I suppose the biggest thing as well was the weather was pretty rank.
Mm.
South Africa just come off the back of beating France, and that emotional high to then try and get themselves back up, which we had something similar in 19, having beaten New Zealand
comfortably. Yeah.
And, like, you're kind of looking at it and it's like, hang on a minute, like, we execute this, it kind of stacks in our favour, and the longer the game goes on, it's tight or we're ahead, the more they feel this burden of, like, oh my god, expectation, and oh my gosh, we might actually lose this. And we kind of got them into that state, but, you know, the boys did an unbelievable job at executing, but equally it was the perfect time to play them, do you know what I mean? It was the perfect time to play them.
What's the stress like in that moment? You know, when you're in it and it is so close.
I was in the stands, but it was, like, horrendous, because you're watching it and you're watching everything unfold and you can see it and you got a perfect view of it and you're thinking, like, just,
and you know what's like, you know the game plan, you know what we need to get out of it.
And you're watching it and you're thinking, then there, Coley and Marla came off and then they put their replacement scrum on and they, you know, the bomb squad started rumbling.
Well, the momentum
shifted massively.
Yeah.
Schneiderman comes on and you're just looking at it thinking, lads, just play the game down there. Like, just don't want scrum. So don't go contestable kicks. Don't try and win it in the air. Just, and we didn't quite adapt, and the rest is history. But, you know,
kudos to them for doing what they did. And but equally, you come off and you see your team, and I was just really proud of the group. Like, I was genuinely super proud of the group. I was hurting, but I was proud. And as you have that weird feeling after, like, obviously I've got some good teammates, good mates that play for South Africa, with obviously Jasper Visa and Andre Pollard, and Pollard's just kicked the kick. And I got on really well with him. I was just like, such, and it's that thing kick, of like, well done, mate. Yeah. Like,
don't speak to me. Yeah.
But let me cool off for 7 days and I'll be in touch. Yeah. But yeah, what a kick, yeah.
Unreal. Yeah, I was with Andre. I did one of these slow walk and talk interviews with him and chatting about what a lovely bloke.
Great guy.
Really, really, I mean, 10 out of 10 looking bloke as well. Not that it matters, but like a lot of the South African lads are. Like I said, we were talking about Stephen Kitt. So once you break them down, but just phenomenal rugby players, right? That's like Deeks at Leicester when you were struggling a few years ago. Not that he rang me for any kind of advice, but he kind of did. He said, well, like, what do you reckon? I said, mate, you need to bring in some Saffers, as in hard, robust, like we know, like the South African lads who came at Saracens as well. Yeah. And
you can build a game plan around them.
Exactly, like,
that's,
that.
That's pretty simple. You know what you're going to get. Yeah, yeah.
And simple.
Yeah, you can definitely, like, it's Sale, so effectively have tried and done that. Montpellier, definitely, you know. Mm-hmm. Apart from the signing with you,
we had Vaughan Olivier,
some flimsy Scottish lad.
Thank you for calling me Scottish, George.
Where do you? What is your alliance? Who do you want to be right now? Who are you?
I'm Scotland till I die, mate.
Yeah,
I live in Edinburgh.
Because you tatted over that English tattoo.
It wasn't an English tattoo.
You had an English rose on your arm.
No, it was
Jim.
A tulip. It was a tulip. Prove it.
It had thorns on it.
They never warmed to me. The Scotland crowd, they did in the end. The Scotland crowd did warm to me in the end.
Yeah. Where's your share price with them at the moment? Like, they're loving you, or?
I think they've warmed to me now. I gave my body to the fucking team.
To the thistle.
To the thistle.
Oi, how funny was that clip the other week that popped up, mate, of me running around?
I gave you the hole. Actually, that wasn't my fault. He skinned me on the outside. I was bodyguarding. Dude, Youngs has gone round.
Clipped me in this clip and sent it. And Jim is literally like running backwards. You know. I'm running around him.
Mr. Gilmore.
Yeah. You know that wasn't my fault. That is the outside defender.
It's a dog leg.
It's a dog leg.
It was a dog leg. It left you out there. But
I came back and blitzed someone. But I'm Scotland till I die, mate. I love Scotland.
Big time, I'm sure. Yeah, I see it through and through.
Do you feel it's a bit now or never for Scotland? Not in terms of, like, they haven't won a Six Nations. Like, they have got a golden generation in terms of, like, obviously Hogg's gone now, but like Russell still pulling the strings, looking unbelievable. Mm. They've got a very good style and the way they play. They've got Ireland at home, have they?
We have got France at home next week, and we've got England at home. And then we've got Ireland away for the Grand Slam decider on Paddy's Day.
But like, do you feel like it's, do you know what I mean? Like, if they don't do it soon,
it's now, isn't it? Especially after the World Cup. And like, I'm quite close to the game and watch a lot of Glasgow, Edinburgh, and want Scotland to do well. The World Cup was an impossible challenge, right? And everyone thought it was going to go the way that it did go. I thought against South Africa we were very good. Against Ireland we were nowhere near it. We struggle against power teams. That's notoriously has been our Achilles heel. And we chatted to Dan Bigger on the rugby pod with Goody. And I said to him, like, what do you think about Scotland if you're Wales? And he's like, there's no plan B. That's what he said. He didn't mention the power. We spoke about the power. He said, there's no plan B. So, yes, we play this awesome style of rugby, almost the polar opposite to how England have gone and won things, yet we've won nothing. Okay, so, yes, you can go in the stadium. We score brilliant tries, and the overs pass that Finn's put in for Hugh Jones that we saw against England a few years ago, and like Blair Kinghorn when he gets in his flow, and Duane van der McMurver as well, the three-legged man scoring brilliant tries. But we don't win when it really matters. Like, we've got big games in us. Like, we've beaten England recently. We beat France during COVID. We've beaten South Africa a couple of times. Beaten Australia as well. Never beaten the All Blacks. But in big tournaments, that's the thing. So I don't know how people can take us seriously until we do that. And it's now or never. Because you look at the teams that are in transition. Like, I look at that England team and I'm having to research like different players, like, you know, really nail down, because they're not rolling off the tongue now because they're new. The same for Wales. I didn't know five or six of the Welsh players. I'm ringing Shanks about this. So I'm looking at the Welsh team and we were 27-0 up at half time. I mean, I didn't think we'd be 27-0 up, but
what
I'm like,
a mad second half.
Crazy. But that is the Achilles heel of Scotland, isn't it? Like, I'm there with Kelly Brown watching it. I'm like, this is 2010 all over. We were 10 points up with 4 minutes to go or something. I was like, this is Scotland here. Play a great brand of rugby, can score tries, but fucking shoot ourselves in the foot. But now like especially where it is, like we can talk a little bit about France as well. They don't look anywhere near the same without Dupont. We've got them at home.
France were...
Yeah.
They remind me of France of old.
Exactly.
I could not... If I was playing them this weekend and I was doing analysis, I couldn't tell you what their strat was. You go off the back of what they'd done previously, but they looked... Like they look lost, mate.
I think emotionally drained because of the World Cup. I think the expectation and
that
you
burden
saw...
burden is still on them.
Yeah. The burden's still on them. No Dupont. Like, he's obviously massive for them. But we've got them at home this week. And then we've got Italy away. And Italy looked loads better, didn't they, as well? And we've got Ireland for the last game on Paddy's Day, where probably Ireland are on for the Grand Slam, right? If you look at how they played. But it's now or never for Scotland. Because you look at what's coming through. We haven't got a huge amount. It's not like England... Definitely not like Ireland. We don't have these youngsters. We have to go, and people joke about it and be like, oh, you know, you've got Duncan van der Merwe on the wing. He's not even Scottish. We know there's a shift now. You look at Roots, for example. He's a Kiwi, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So we've got to go down that route. We haven't got front rowers coming through. Mm. A young lad came on at the weekend. He's like fourth choice at Northampton or something. He gets capped. So we are battling on that front, but we've got a generational back line. Like Ben White, as you know, is a good player.
Yeah. Gets the ball, like, he's lively, gets the ball in and out, speed of, you know, they play his tempo, they play with speed, right?
Exactly.
But you look at Ireland, look pretty formidable. I think that cohesion.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Ireland have is, you know, they all play together at club, majority, and, you know, they look well-ordered. But then equally, I look at France and think, oh, that's not the France I know. Yeah. You know, at the weekend it really wasn't.
Mm. They were miles off. Yeah, did you watch it, Cruiser?
Yeah, yeah. They just went back to France of old, as you say, like pick and go, pick and go. But they've got these power athletes. They've got such good athletes, and they can be so. They can turn it on like within a second. You can be under the sticks. It's just.
It's like, that latina, yeah.
That bound together, like again to your point, Ireland get that throughout. They've been sort of. A lot of Smith still comes through in how they were coached and sort of the detail side. I think French just looked like they were lacking a lot of that detail and their type of team that maybe don't necessarily need the out and out detail because they've got these like massive players who can do bits pretty quickly. But like you do need some, and obviously Dupont not being there
and that's
just lacked a bit of detail. I thought
detail's the one and Ireland. Like I rugby pass posted the picture, but I mean it was just one that I posted out. I think it's 20 games now, might be 19. But I think it's 20. Won every game but one.
Yeah.
Won every game but one, and it was that quarter final. And they are, I mean, the World Cup. That's you talk of Achilles' heel. I don't know how you ever overcome that. I don't know, but they're phenomenal.
And I can only talk on my behalf, and George, obviously, you might be the same, but. The 2019 final, like, I still think about that a lot, like, a lot. And I remember Eddie always said to us, he was like, boys, because he'd obviously lost one and won one at that point. And he was like, you won't remember the one you won as much. It's the one you lost that will haunt you. And you kind of didn't realise that until you lose one. And it does, it stays with you. So those guys will, I don't think they'll ever, that will always be there. Mm. Like, I still think about it every so often. And it's a strange thing, isn't it? Because happened for... 4 or 5 years ago now, but it's kind of that's a big obstacle. And I suppose if they go on and win the Grand Slam, it kind of certainly makes it easier. But they'll you know some of those guys won't get another crack at another one either.
It shows you how good they are, though.
Yeah,
the come back like and play the way that they did. And I there's a little, I'm a bit jealous with the setup that they've got in Ireland. Mm. You look at the players coming through, the systems that they've got, the amount of money they get paid, the highest paid players in the world, and rightly so, they should be. They're game unbelievable.
Time. The amount of game time on the way their bodies, they're well looked after.
There you go. So they've got a well good managed. Yeah. They get the tax relief as well when they finish play. I was trying to explain it to the missus. I didn't explain it very well, but you class as an artist if you play in Ireland. So if you're an actor, a singer, theatre, an athlete, you get a load of your tax back. So apparently Brian O'Driscoll got like 10 million or something, got a check through the door saying, there you go.
10 million. Sure, there's a bit of spice on that.
Unbelievable. But so with Ireland, are they as good as we're kind of talking about? When you play against them, like, what is it?
No, they are good. The biggest thing is their ability to have a huge amount of options and shape in condensed areas. So I suppose attack, the fundamentals of attack is you want momentum and you want speed of ball, and they get both very, very often. And how they get that is the tightness of their shape, and they just carry, and the cleaning is so aggressive, low, and the ball's just there on a plate. Gibson Park is honestly just there, boom, playing, picking up short sides, throwing it, because the ball is always available, and that comes from their shape. And on the back of their shape is they have the ability to play short and long and move it. And, they're just clever. I mean, the first line out of the weekend, not the first line because I went to the corner, but the first attacking proper one, they go to a five-man lineup. They go off the top, they hit Keenan Doris, right, who then chucks a 10-metre pass off his left hand that then goes to the sort of that 13 channel, because Jalabert's then defending at 13. They run a little Brumbies, which is a centre, and they put another back row short, comes out the back. They get into that sort of seam. Second phase, Jalabert's gone back short side. They've gone face ball in front of two forwards, straight to Bundiaki, who's between the 15 and winger seam, right? Inside ball, blah, 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 try. And everyone looks at that and goes, oh my God, But actually, they just make it look so simple, but it's taken like great analysis, right? This is where we're targeting. This is what we're going to do. We're going to get over to this channel. Ramos closes early. And it's just clever, man. They're just clever.
Yeah.
Just a lot of moving parts, but my God, they can all execute and make good decisions.
Mm. But you can do that after... Like, when you started off, say, with Sarah's, you have maybe 15 years ago, you have a group of players and you need to build a base. And then as you keep that group of players together, the longer you can keep a decent group of players together, the more you can layer on. Like, it might be this tournament we're going to put this move in, this tournament we're going to add this type of shape or whatever it is. The longer you can keep those players together, and if you're well coached, you just start levelling up across the board. And I feel like Ireland's a product of unbelievable good detail, but also a system that is very much probably two clubs, so everyone sort of knows in and out sort of what's going on, but also just keeping the players together for as long as possible, and that's a product of decent pay, opportunity, and so on,
and
so,
well looked after,
well, yeah, and well looked after. Yeah, so
you could name the Ireland, like, as in for the last 4 years, you could name the Irish team, so the consistency of what they've played at, and right, and when you look between 16 and 19 under Eddie, when we had real success, you could pretty much name the England team. There was, and you couldn't necessarily name that right now. Like, you could have a rough idea of the England team, but you couldn't really name it. Wales is the same. Scotland, you could pretty much nail it. You could, and France, kind of, because I thought a few lads of theirs had retired and they've come back out of retirement, like Taofi Fanua. I know he didn't play at the weekend, but he'd retired after the World Cup, and Antonio had. And
yeah, I thought Willian Antonio did as well. I didn't take that up until... But again, yesterday,
France for years used to not be able to name that. You couldn't, it was anyone's guess who they were going to pick. So I think that consistency, as Cruiser says, like, they've played so much together and they just, they are well drilled, well coached. You can just tell it.
Yeah, well, that snapshot of analysis you gave us is great. I mean, obviously, I'm not picking up stuff like that. I've got my head focused on the skill set of some of the forwards. But mentioned Saracens, I remember, and this sounds crazy to say, right? And well, maybe it doesn't because you watch me play. I went through a professional career and I couldn't pass a rugby ball. Like, as in a 2-on-1, a 5-metre pass at speed, that was like, I'd dream about it, as in a worst nightmare. I couldn't fucking pass and my shoulders are fucked, I couldn't tackle. So you touched my rib when you came in, weren't you? It's like bulging out. I used to tackle my chest.
I thought he was holding one of those like man bags,
Yeah, exactly.
Turns out it's his rib.
I thought it was a defibrillator strapped to me, but it's a rib. So I used to tackle with my chest. So I made a career on being unskillful. But when I was at Saracens, and this sounds crazy to say, 2016, every Monday and Tuesday, we started doing, as forwards, wide passing, right? So we go in the gym and we come out and do wide passing. And it was hilarious watching some of us. I mean, Caruso was
the
right.
The backs literally would line up and get popcorn and start clapping.
It's that laughing every pass. Yeah. I couldn't even fling it out left and right. Ridiculous. The skill set now, I mean, what's that? 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And we couldn't do it. But then once I retired and I saw Saracen started to evolve their game and guys like Caruso, Marrow to a degree, but are whipping passes like left and right. And you look at Doris, like he, in my mind, is a carrier, right? A bull of a man, gets over the game line, physicality, step in contact. But you're right, it's passing. And the level of skill that these players have got now, that's why it comes back to the initial thing, how skillful an athlete rugby players are. An island like this, it's a kind of, that's a snapshot, I think, of what and how good rugby is.
No, I agree. Because how many eights can actually do that? You know, there are some, obviously, that could. But, you know, you've got to have a move and you could think, right, that's how you break him down. You need to get to Jalibert at 13. And you know, right, well, how are we going to do it? We need to have five, man. Right, well, who's going to chuck that pass? And it's like, well, if you haven't got the skill set to do it, it's thinking, well, we can't do that then. So that one's out the window, but they have. And I really think eights now have, they influence the game the most. Like, they can, you know, you look at the best, like Ardi Savir, you know, even Dwayne Vermeulen.
Jasper
Visa.
He goes well.
Keenan Doris, who is
good.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Doris, I think, is unbelievable as well. But, like, you know what I mean? They have a ordered, like, list goes on, right? But these eights are so influential in these games. And I think he's key to Ireland. He really is.
Player. You mentioned eights. That's where Scotland, we've got Jack Dempsey, played for Australia. He's just come back from injury. Good. We've got Matt Fagus in as well. But do we have token pole of a number eight, you know what I mean? As in, and that's where when England were at the best, you had Billy.
Yeah.
You know, you had Billy, and he was probably the first name on the team sheet.
No, I agree, and they influence the game. You look at, like, they do. They genuinely come up with big moments, and big moments could be a jackal, big moments could be a carry, but they do. Like, the best teams have brilliant eights that have an influence on the game, and they have moments. You know, when you go back to a moment and you think, momentum changed there, who did it? What was the eight? Like, severe, man. Like, Jesus.
Well, that was Wales at the weekend. Aaron Wainwright.
Yes.
Number eight. Got man of the match.
They don't give up, do they, Wales?
They hang in there, man. They don't. Well, yeah. Levels. So, we had RG Snyman on the pod, and we had Dan Bigger was with us, and just throwaway comment, RG, like, who are you scared of, mate? He's going around ripping shirts off, he said, of fucking all the players when he's pissed. He was like, mate, who are you scared of? Like, what's the team? And he said the All Blacks. So I'm not scared of, but who's the physical contest? So naturally the All Blacks, as we know. But he said Wales. He's like, physically, they don't go away, do they? And I know, like, you can look at that. That's not a fluke. Them coming back into the game against Scotland isn't a fluke. But England got them this weekend, Caruso. Confident?
Looking forward to it.
What's the contortionist stuff saying? Like, what you're saying from the outside? They don't go away. Is that the headline? You don't need to give too much.
Get out of here.
They've got Alan Wynne-Jones as a consultant.
Have they?
I don't know. You would do. He might be in. Talk to us about Wales. So England-Wales this weekend. Give us an idea of what it's like playing against them.
You're a commentator.
I'm not commentating.
Are you not doing that anymore?
I got sat by ITV.
Eesh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Finally found
you and Clive.
They got some good talent.
You and Clive.
Yeah, me and Clive together.
Clive stopped.
He stepped down himself. I don't know. I'm in this alternative media space. Yeah. I'm much more comfortable.
You don't need it anyway, Jim. You've got
happy.
You've got plenty of things going on.
What have you got going on? You've got the big Jim show, obviously.
Yeah.
The one and only.
You've been listening to it.
Yep. Yeah, big time.
Man, Jasper Visa was sat in your seat.
Yeah,
as well. You were listening to that one.
Yeah, big time. Yeah,
Tom Stoltman were here as well. The dream is for this to grow.
Yeah.
Obviously, the World Cup stuff was class, doing the pitch side stuff.
Yeah.
I've seen some really good bits from you, and that's not me sort of...
No, it's like, nice of you to be
You know, this is a love-hate relationship.
Yeah.
You love me, I hate you. Like, it is very love-hate, but I've seen some good bits.
Yeah, no, I'm loving it. It's not an easy road.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, like, it's not. And
what's the most difficult bit?
The most difficult bit has been breaking down the old school mentality of the way things that are done in rugby from a media perspective, from an access perspective. I've been doing this for 7 years. So me and Goody did the pod, started off talking about Dixon Bush and very loose, very lad banter, right? It was almost like an alter ego. It was me when
so
I was 21,
22.
Yeah, we're getting into that later, perfect. But we started that process before. And as you know, like when we were at Saracens, I did a show called Don't Mess With Jim. So we were pitch side. I'll interview Caruso and Jamie and all the lads, and we put it out on YouTube and it get 300 views. And then I've been at Rugby Pass doing all these things. I did a behind the scenes doc at Leicester with the academy when Jack Van Poorfleet, George Martin were coming through, Freddie Stewart as well. and I don't know, getting laughed at.
It's
a
stepping stone process, right?
A stepping stone, but also making mistakes. People laughing at you along the way, like, as in you'll get people like talking about, oh, your podcast, fucking here they are, a bunch of jokers. And I'd take it in and be like, everything I did was very intentional. Yeah, like, I knew where the space was. I knew where the void was. And also, I'm not like your stereotypical rugby player. As we know, as a young lad, like, I hadn't come through a system like that. Joking aside, I fucking weren't that good at rugby, but I could get stuck in. And I loved the lads and the athletes. And I used to like look around and I'd be like, fucking love it. Like, as in, you look at the athleticism. And again, to go back to NFL and NBA and UFC and all these different sports, which I do really like, the growth of the sport didn't lie with the product on the field. Mm. It was everything else around it. And doing that Don't Mess With Jim Mosaris and doing the podcast, I was like, we're missing a trick here, because you've got some of the weirdest, most wonderful, greatest athletes from all walks of life, massive human beings, yet we don't know anything about it. And there's this big push now, and I don't mean to sound negative on this, and I don't want it to sound like I told you so, but you see the Netflix doc that's come out now, there's a desperation that this big collaborative approach by all the unions and all the players, and they're pushing it out, and it's almost like this desperation, like, look at us. I think authentically we could have done it a different way. And by doing stuff like this, like just having a chat with the fucking lads and, you know, and giving insight and stuff like that is the way forward. But for me, the World Cup was the big shift.
Yeah.
Because I nearly left.
A shift in terms of, like, you got more access?
Well, I was going to leave rugby. So I had a job at Harley Davidson lined up. I was like, I've done now. I do the rugby pod and I need to go into something else. I like rugby, but I don't love it. Mm-hmm. And my boss at World Rugby, who bought Rugby Pass, called James Rothwell, brilliant bloke, really smart guy, sees the game how I see, knows where the growth of the game lies, right? He understands that. And the kind of one thing in my mind, having children as well, and look at how they consume life and sport and media and entertainment and stuff, is trying to find our cultural relevancy. So how do we compete with music? How do we compete with movies? How do we compete with other sports in what they do? You look at Formula One grabbing the attention of people around the world who don't even understand anything about Formula One, probably don't even watch the whole race. With Drive Survive, what they've done. And it's almost a bit of a circus, right? I had Lee McKenzie in here. She follows, she does it all. She's like, it's a traveling circus. Unapologetic about what they are. And I said, if I get an opportunity at the World Cup, this is what I said to my boss, I'm done. I'm not interested. He said, but if you could do one thing, I said, mate, get us pitch side, get us in the changing rooms with the lads like they do in the NRL. Mm. Some of them won't like it. Some of them will. The fucking fans all love it. Yeah. I was like, bring in celebrities who enjoy our game. We saw the guy at the weekend. How do you say his name again? I'm going to put it on the spot.
He was the baddie from...
Spider-Man.
No, the goblin. The Green Goblin.
The Green Goblin.
That's his name, I think.
Green Goblin. Yeah. That's his name. He was there at the game. I know in rugby, and you know as well, like being there, you get the celebrities come to the game. Daniel Craig, like J.K. Rowling's been at them, Henry Cavill, Superman.
Ed Sheeran,
Niall Horan, Beckham, Mbappe was obviously there for the opener. Jason Momoa loves the All Blacks. He's got an exhibition game being played there. Javier Bardem was obviously pitch side with him. Rita Ora, Taika Waititi loves the All Blacks as well.
A couple of name drops there, mate.
But I have to. Of course. This is what it means. Like, for me,
that's what's going to draw the audience. So good.
Because they're there at the pitch side and they are like, holy shit, it's the All Blacks, it's South Africa, it's England, it's Scotland. Like, Gerard Butler comes in and he's got a Scotland shirt on. It's like, this is fucking insane. Yeah. And I was like, if we can get them closer to the pitch and bring the fans in closer, which unfortunately for the world is social media, then we might then move the dial to make the game more commercially viable, more interesting.
Make it cooler. If Jared Butler wants to be pitch side.
There you go.
A lot of people who think he's very cool.
So Javier Bardem loved it that much that he wants to get involved in Spanish rugby.
Oh, really?
Whether that's investment, whether that's just profile, that's what the game needs.
It does, Jim. And that's one of the reasons myself and Coley done ours is we want to grow the game. We want to engage people. We want to give them insight in terms of what it's like to be professional. We want to have humour with it. We want to laugh. Of course we do. We want to be serious when we need to be serious. But we want to just get people talking about it, enjoying it. Because you're right, Jim, for so long it's been done, no, this is how we do it. And no, you can't have access to that. And even the doco, right, it's limited access, isn't it? I mean, they've done a great job in trying to like jazz it up. But you don't see that much because no one's willing to be, I suppose, vulnerable and go, right, I'm going to put myself all out there.
and you might get dicked at the weekend, right? And you're there giving the tactics and all that. And it takes a confident, I suppose, environment and coach to go, right, ego, have full access to me because I'm going to be that good about what I do. But people are craving it. Like, people want, like, you know, the 1997 Lions?
I brought that up 100%.
People love it because it's all access. But you'll never get that again now until someone goes, for the benefit of the game, mate.
Part of the agreement
come
is.
Come in, and I'll sit in coach's room, sit in selection meeting, sit in an outlet, like, come and see the lot, fill your boots, and then you'll get people, oh yeah, this is good.
Did you watch the 97 Lions, though? You've seen it? You've not watched it? Cruise
it's an epic,
casual
mate.
Fan.
It's an epic, mate.
The 97 Lions, living with Lions, is what made me fall in love with rugby. I weren't a rugby player
it's quite a powerful
back
seven.
Then. Big, powerful. Hey, Scotland would never have got me. But, it did, mate, you no, look at the access. No, yeah, mate, but me and many other people as well. Yeah. In a very old-fashioned world of rugby, which it was back then. But people still talk about it to this day. Mm. And you look at the access the South African team gave to Chasing the Sun and what they're doing. Like, that's... You need drama. There needs to be drama, entertainment, and... Yeah, so we're obviously scratching the surface of what we can do. And
When one team does it, gives that full access,
and they
right?
see the...
deck of cards. Yeah. The rest will all do it. Yeah. It's just
but
who's going to be the first to go.
This one, I think. Race. That's happening with this one.
Are they filming in one now?
Yeah.
I thought they were because I saw some cameras in the Scotland.
Are they doing it again?
Room.
Are they?
And that's all, great. I think they've all people have followed in. You know, like your Mercedes and your Ferrari from the second season of Drive to Survive. Like, I think people are leaning into it a bit more.
There we go, Cruz. That's some great insight from you.
But you need that, Jim. I agree with you, mate. Until it grows, until you get all that, and you say, you know, you're there, you need to be able to have all this access. Like, you know, I know that they mic'd someone up the other day, didn't they?
Yeah, Stephen Lovato.
Brilliant, mic up a couple. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, get, like, how can you...
That's cool.
And do trial and error, like, if people bother by it or not. But you don't know until you try it. Like,
I'm almost exhausted. I don't even talk about that stuff now, because I mentioned that before. Like, I was talking about, you think, André Parlade at the World Cup semi-final, that kick against England... And his heart rate is up on the screen and throughout the stadium. It's not silence, respect the kick. I'm a bit up rogue here, so you might feel differently. You can hear ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. You can see his heart rate going and people are screaming. So you're building the jeopardy of every moment, every single moment that brings fans in. Then it's commercially sellable. Yeah. You sell that to a Red Bull and you'd be like, mate, you can own that moment where André Parlade is about to knock England out of the Rugby World Cup. Yeah, exactly. The Red Bull's like that.
As I said earlier, it's the consequences. That's what people love sport. It's of the course. Something's on the line. And like things that add to that drama of it because you want it to be entertaining, a drama and all that. And there's so much scope, man.
And you're doing your thing as well. And you get people saying, oh, who needs another rugby podcast? You know, like that can be the general consensus in there. I'm like, 100% we need another rugby podcast. You've got the most capped England player ever. You've got a 48-year-old dinosaur who's been around the block doing it. Like Haskell's doing his, Marla's doing his.
The narratives.
I suppose the biggest thing for me and Cole is we're both still in it.
Yeah.
The other thing is we can be insightful in terms of, like, we want to be able to be quite insightful in terms of analysis, but we're not going to be breaking down Premiership games. We'll be breaking down European games. We'll do bits of the Six Nations for sure, but like just old stories and rugby and, you know, get involved. We want the fans to get involved, questions and all this sort of stuff. But the biggest thing is, like Jim says, really, is can we get engagement? Can we grow the sport? Can we bring some insightful information, but also be humorous? Can we kind of share what rugby is and what it's given us and get people to go, do you know what? Like, sounds a bit of fun, this sport, or you know, I like to get involved in that and essentially do that. And as Jim says, like, there is plenty out there, and you know, we're not going to try and reinvent the wheel because a lot of what's done right now is very, very good. But you know, we'll just kind of do it our way, which is Coley's cynical bastard, but great fun, and we'll have a bit of fun with it.
Yeah, good.
But the thing, you didn't mention one thing, and this is the humility as well that you've got. What's the biggest positive and benefit that you and Coley have? What's the gold? What's the main thing you need?
God, you have to help them more. Yeah.
Audience.
Yeah, of course, but what do the audience want?
Teammates.
They want access.
Fellow players, access.
Mate, you've got access. you two, two of the most respected players in the England team, as in, and you know what it's like.
Yeah, no,
it
is. And that is a big thing, because you can call upon lads to go, you know, will you jump on? And we want it to be to this state where actually lads want to come on. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'll sit down with Lenny and Coley and we'll just have a laugh, you know what I mean? And do that. But you're right, the access is there, and that, I suppose, relationships, a lot of them are already built through years of playing.
It's a hustle as well, as you look at it you know, if you do look at it like a business, like I don't, like I do this because genuinely I love doing it. It's a different thing, you know, you both seem very comfortable doing it, but it is a different thing in our sport, is to sit in a studio and have a crack and open up like you're not in a studio. But the authenticity and the hustle that it takes, like anything, like if you want it to go well and want it to grow, and the authenticity, and did I say authenticity?
No, you're right, mate. Because even the first episode we recorded, right, Jim, I was like, even though I was just chatting with Coley, right, it felt like I was maybe in front of the media. Do you know what I mean? And by three or four, like, we were really, really relaxed. But it's
a big shift.
It takes a big shift, that mind, because for so long you put in front of the cameras and all that. And Cruz, you know what I'm like around camp. Like, I'm a bit.
You and me both.
But like, have a laugh, right? Yeah. But you know, I couldn't help but have, you know what I mean? So it will take some adapting, but it's going to be fun, mate. I'm like, do you know what I mean? I'm just looking forward to it and see where it takes me. And like you say, Jim, I've always had a bit of a passion for chatting.
And what's the
chewing the fat?
So yeah, what's
you talk, so it's like, let's get a coffee and sap.
Yeah, I'm good at that.
I should
Jim is fucking good at that.
Rubber stamp the sappuccino. I started it.
I mean, that seems a consistent trait with all podcasts.
Have a moan.
Yeah.
But who doesn't moan? Everyone moans,
Ash,
right?
He's got a podcast, right?
Who?
Ash?
Oh, BBC, does BBC. Yeah, that's serious. That's straight laced. How funny is Ashy on TV? Sounds like Alan Carr.
So good.
Voice has completely changed.
So pale.
Hello.
But it's,
he's a brilliant human.
Ashy,
yeah,
he's a lovable rogue.
So much time
he is
it.
A lovable rogue. Like,
good way of describing him. Yeah.
I've
yeah.
seen him put through a glass window by one of the lads before. Yeah. There was glass
was
everywhere.
The Christmas party?
That was at the Christmas party. After he's pissed on my coat, it wasn't me. He put him through the window. But you can't not love the bloke. Like, you think this bloke is the biggest.
I don't know. There's a lot of people who could absolutely hate him.
Yeah, but when you actually break him down,
if you're somewhere near his inner circle, then.
To know him is to love him, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's one of them, like,
lovable rogue. That's it. Yeah. Like, there's nothing more.
He's sort of like one of the guys. Like, you can call him a bell end, but if anyone else did, you'd be like, hey, mate, no, you can't do that. Like, you know what I mean? You can't do it. He's a good bloke. You can't say that. Like, but you can, because you know what I mean. He's a good fella.
Space for everyone. So, what is it going to be like? What's the strategy? Maybe you're not doing this, but is it video, audio, bit of both?
No, it's audio, Jim. And it is. Well, I mean, Coley's done me dirty by going back into camp, so Cruz has stopped picking him, mate, and then I can have my buddy back to actually record with.
But, good reason not to.
Yeah, exactly. So no, it'll all be audio, all downloadable.
Why can't he? Sorry to cut you off. Why can't he be in camp and do it? Why can't he do like the Travis and Jason Kelce when they're in the middle of an NFL?
NFL
season.
We can do remote recording. We probably can. One big issue is that is, and Cruz, I know this sounds ridiculous, Penny Hill Park Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it's good. You know why? Might be better now. Because,
Jim, surrender.
What the?
Nah, it might be better because Luke Cowan-Dickie's not playing COD till 3 in the morning.
Yeah, that's true. But
it's not downloaded. He's got like he had this like super server thing which would hijack the Wi-Fi, and all the analysis guys were livid because their Wi-Fi just kept tanking every time like he comes in. But it fully hijacked the Wi-Fi, and he'd be up playing Call of Duty as number one in the world at what was it?
You'd be mid-stroke and a fucking cut out, mate.
Luke Cowan-Dickie, the lads are stroking, and there's nothing because he's playing COD. He's a loose goose. Yeah,
he's brilliant human.
Great human.
What a player.
And this is the actor, right?
What a good player.
And this is the thing as well, Jim, like you mentioned earlier, and I totally agree with you, is how do we give a platform for lads to come on and show themselves the way that we know them? Do you know what I mean? Is how do you...
It's tougher, because it's that's the thing. It's like breaking down the fact that...
And that's where that relationship, myself and Coley, know each other. Like, you know what I mean? We know the lads. It's like, you know, hopefully when they're sat with us, they feel relaxed enough to know that it's like this is now. Like, just chatting.
There's got to be the trust that, like, you know, they say something probably that goes a little bit too far. That
just cut
obviously
out.
That doesn't make... Yeah,
just cut it out.
But you need to get... You should have been down with... I'd love to have seen him when he was down in Exeter, and he had like a horse, and he'd like he'd take it out to like the local bit of grass and stamp it up. Like you that a video of
like
that
a jippy.
No, like a video of that, you know, getting into the guts of what he used to do down there, that would be
like, he'd be my favourite player.
That'd be so much
Luke Cowan-Dickie, no teeth, like chopping lads like motherfuckers, like literally just chopping them down like you'd
when
never
we talk
see
about hard, when we, you know, when you talk about bodies being ruined, Dickie's body is going to be absolutely it's going to be wrecked, isn't it? The way he plays,
you can see pure
cannibal. He is aggressive, abrasive, a bit like Mudos, really. Got no regard for his body. Like,
good character as well, though. Good character.
Good guy.
Like, not the same as everyone else.
He's a good lad, not like everyone else. Yeah.
Again, a bit like an Ashy.
Lovable rogue. Right, so give us an idea, Caruso, on Wales then, because we need to do a bit of rugby, don't we? We've got to service the fans.
What are you saying?
So when you've played against Wales before...
I thought I'd distracted you and taken you off.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to put you on. So I've got some ideas about Wales. I'm someone that has said, oh, you know, Wales are struggling this year, like it isn't their year. And I always talk about this one specific, because it was 2019. I was like, yeah, Wales won't do anything in the World Cup. Like, they're just the profile of the team, the age group of their team, the form going in. And they made it to a semi-final and nearly beat South Africa. But England have got them at Twickenham.
Yeah.
And if you speak to any Welshman, any Scotsman, anyone,
yeah,
playing England in London, it is like the must-win game. That's what it is being English men. I'm a quarter English. We're all English. But that's what it is. Like, everyone wants to fucking beat you.
Yeah.
And you've got Wales coming after that crazy game at the weekend.
Yeah.
What's it like as a forward playing against Wales?
I mean, to the point where we made before on them, like, they don't give up, which is, you know, it's like, sometimes you want, at 60-minute mark, you kind of want that team to give up, and they definitely don't, so that's something that you've got in the back of your mind. They run a lot, they keep the ball on the field a lot, they, like, all the things you are very obvious, sort of, Gatland's played for the last 10 years or so, they all sort of ring true still. And you know they're gonna work you. I'd say, as an English guy, like, you know, playing at Twickenham, first home game in the campaign for us, like a fairly decent young team that we've got, new caps and so on, like, pure excitement. I think there's like the World Cup, we did well. There's no doubts about it. And I know we talked about the group and stuff, but did really well. And I think there's just a good opportunity, a good chance to really, like, get the fans on board, play some good rugby, and put a bit of a stamp. You know, if you play Italy, you win it. Play Wales, you win it. You know, who knows where you can get to off the back of that. So, I think the overriding thing would just be excitement, like a good energy, good buzz against a side that, you know, like I said, doesn't give up.
Yeah, because... People keep talking about this excitement and energy. As players, Youngsy, when you were in the World Cup and there was booing in the stadium, and again, it's been spoken about, obviously, everything around Faz as well, do you feel like the fans don't quite understand the way that England want to play, or do you understand why they would be booing with the way that England play? And you're part of that, right? Because you're box-kicking, so you're the one at the back of the ruck, it's the long ruck, and then the ball goes up and it's like, oh, fuck it now. And we understand as players the reason why you're doing that.
Right, yeah. I don't think that any team deserves to get booed, and almost... England were the villains of the World Cup, right? Like, that's how it felt. Like, we were sort of... every team wants to beat you, and, you know, you're not popular nation as such, and it became like this narrative and this sort of, like, a bit of a circus and fun for fans to turn up and boo and, you know what I mean, be part of that sort of, create this sort of villain. You know, England play the way they play and it's effective and not necessarily easy on the eye. And I know there's been a lot of chat about England want to be more entertaining and all that and stuff. You know, like, that doesn't just happen though. So I know there's been a lot of noise probably out of camp coming out saying, you know, we want to play and we want to, you know, expand our game. But, like, I think sometimes people think that they're going to play like the Barbars this weekend. They ain't. They're going to play whatever the way needs to play to beat Wales because suddenly you're 2-2 with 2 weeks leading into the next game, right? And I think the entertainment or the style of play comes, you don't see it now, but you've got to start sort of building them foundations, right? So when England play Italy round one to how they play end of the tournament France, like, that's when you kind of have this discussion of, like, where are England really at? I can't tell you right now, but there's a lot of good positive noise coming out of camp, right? Which they're obviously working on it and trying it. And I saw the ball get to the edge more at the weekend, and I was impressed. And I sort of felt very, I suppose, enthusiastic after the game about, yeah, that's good. I can see scope, but it ain't gonna be this weekend, mate, where it's suddenly zinging around. Do you know what I mean? But there'll be more, and then the following week, hopefully more again, and it's like a long process. Attack's the hardest thing to get going.
But why are they changing then? So if it did work, if it got you to third place in the World Cup, it got you to put a performance in like you did against South Africa, why is there the need? And I know the profile of the players, you've got a lot of Northampton players in there, big change, yeah. You've got a lot of Quinns players in there as well. But why do you need to start zinging it about?
Not zinging it about, it's about being more, I suppose, hold the ball a bit longer, go a few more phases, potentially not even take a risk, but just be able to be comfortable on the ball, which we haven't done. But if you look at the players have all got the ability to do that. So I think, you know, do you pick a team that suits a game plan, or do you create a game plan with the team that you've got?
Mm.
So you look at the England team that they've got now, the game plan would suggest or suit that team and those individuals more if it was a bit more expansive. So I think it has to, do you know what I mean? Also, you can't get away from it. It's an entertaining business and all that, and, you know, tickets and all that. So it needs to be a product. But that narrative, they probably need to shift that narrative, and, you know, because of it sort of being highlighted. So there's probably a little bit of like drip feeding that into the media of we're doing this, we're doing that. But you look at the team and you're thinking, we've got the team to do it. And that team would suit playing a bit more expansive. So therefore, I think they'll do it. And I saw it the weekend. So, you know, obviously Marcus is injured, but, you know, he could come back in. You've got George and, you know, those guys can play. They can move the ball. So it would be wrong to not utilise the strengths that England have, which traditionally was forward, pack, dominant, you know, ball goes in the air and you squeeze teams, right? Well, actually, you haven't really got the biggest of ball carriers now. So you have to change the way we play.
Mm.
I don't know if I've answered the question.
Yeah,
there,
you have. Yeah, you have.
Do you know what I mean?
About the players. Are you allowed to pass judgment on who you'd have in? Yeah, are you at that stage of your career?
The biggest thing for me, the biggest thing for me is those guys at the weekend all got some minutes under their belt and all played a test match, right? And there's Italy improving, but there's bigger tests to come, and it starts this weekend against Wales. I'd just like to see the same team go out there again, mate, and just get another consistency. Do you know what I mean? Get another game under their belts and play. Because to England to evolve, right, and to play and become more of a two or three ways of winning a game, right, then that team, and we spoke about Ireland early and the consistency of their selection, all that, you know, you want those guys to play and kind of then get hold of it. So I'd just like to see the same team take the field again and go. And then suddenly, you know, you beat Wales. You then got 2 weeks leading up to Scotland, which is going to be a very, very hard game. You know, they've held our number over the last 4 years.
Yes.
But, you know, you're four weeks into camp. You've got two games under your belt. You're leading up to it. And it's so that's what I'd like to see.
What about at 10? I know Marcus is injured for this week as well. I'm a big fan of Finn Smith. I'm a massive fan of Marcus as well. Obviously, George is playing 10. He's got 92 caps or something. Hell of an experience. Struggled a little bit in defence against Italy. Like, Monicello was coming down that channel.
Coming down that channel, weren't they?
Like, of course they were. Like, fucking...
You would.
Brex as well was a massive centre, and the game plan was great. But at some point, they're going to have to double down on a 10, right? I think, and this is only my opinion, but you look at the greatest teams gone by. Okay, I know it was a bit of an anomaly in South Africa with Manny Lobot going off and Andre Pollard coming in, but it was between them two. But every team has a 10, right? As in, if they're going to go and win something, the 10 is their best player, generally. Do you have an opinion on who should be in that position, Youngsy, going forward? Because Finn Smith has blown up in the Prem, right?
Yeah.
Marcus does what he does. He's been playing at 15, ultra-skillful, probably hasn't made the mark on international rugby because he's not been given the opportunity in 10. Jersey, it's a topical thing to have. I don't know how comfortable you are.
No, it is. No, absolutely fine. I look at it and think who you pick at 10 probably tells you how much they really want to expand their game. And that's, you know, you can read into that what you want. But like, I look at George, who is a phenomenal test player. And I look at Marcus, who probably hasn't had the run yet to sort of, I suppose, make it his own, right? So it depends which route you want to go with. So do you want someone that's... Because to put someone in like Finn Smith, to put someone in like Marcus, they, are going to take time and you might have to wear a few along the way, right? With George, you know what you're getting. You're getting an unbelievable, consistent distribution, kicking game. Like, the biggest thing that George does as well is lead throughout the week, right? And he leads and he demands and he trains and all that. So, you know, are those guys capable of doing that to his level? Probably not yet, but they'd have to be given, I suppose, the reins to go do that. So, yeah, we're blessed with 10s, aren't we?
Mm.
It's weird. Like, we're blessed in some positions with, like, you could pick any of those three. And then in other positions, you're like, you haven't. Like, it's hard to know. You know what I mean? You could change every week. So, but I don't want Marcus. I think he's going to be out for a while, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I've heard that as well.
So, you know, George has been there, done it, and he's a great... I thought he played very well at the weekend, and Finn Smith can now sort of almost drip, get him 20 minutes, get him 15, 20 minutes after games and see how he goes. And Marcus, I think, was playing very, very good. So it'd have been interesting, mate, to see who they'd have gone with for the first game. I haven't really answered the question.
Who do you think they would have gone with? Like, if they wanted to play... Because everything's pointing towards Marcus, right? So yeah. Faz is not there.
No,
Marcus played 15?
Marcus played 15.
Against
in the World Cup.
Not so. Against South Africa, though.
No.
Because Freddie was awesome.
Samoa, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Samoa. So I think... I think...
Like a pineapple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor kid. That photo is so funny.
I think they'd have gone with Marcus. I do. I think they would have picked Marcus at 10. And then George, I should think, would have benched and then come on and, you know, be able... Because he can play both. George can chase a game, he can close a game out. He's a master of many different trades when it comes to knowing the game inside out. So I think that's probably what they'd have done. And done that. So as I say, I just want to see, as a fan now, an England fan, like, you've got a crop of youngsters coming through. You've still got the blend of experience that's going to help them youngsters. I'd just like to see the same team go out and expand on what they did at the weekend, because with every game, you get better in the Six Nations. Like, the same England that you saw round one ain't going to be the same England in round five. They're going to be better, as are France, as are Ireland. Slightly scary. But, you know, each team is, by the end, is, you know, they're sort of almost flying, really.
Yeah. It's about momentum, isn't it, as well? Like, this is the tagline to say. But no one will remember Italy and Wales, with all due respect, if you're into the third game against Scotland.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're into that, and then you're on for a grand slam.
The thing with Wales is, I think this weekend they're coming to Twickenham, and essentially they'll look at that, I think, as a free swing. Like, I don't think that they will fit. You know, I think will be very much taking all the pressure off them. We're going to go there, and this is how we're going to do it, and, you know, all the pressure's on them. And, you know, the Wales, like you say, Cruiser, they never go away. They hang in there, and they've got enough individual brilliance and flair to create opportunities. And then, so I think it makes for a great game, because they're kind of, England and Wales are both, no one really knows, like, where their ceiling is yet, and so it's going to be a good shootout, really.
Yeah, and then I look at England, I look at the forwards, right, and again, you go back just a few years ago, Cruiser, when you were playing, you could name the pack. You could almost, like, nail down, like, you'd have Marla or Genji, as Lou said, you'd have Jamie at hooker. With Dickie, yeah. Dickie was on fire as well. Like, tight head would be up for debate, but Coley would be wearing that jersey yourself, and Marrow in the second row. You'd have Billy at number eight. The back rows were awesome. Whoever you'd have at seven and six. Courtney at six as well.
Yeah.
When I look at England now, I'm like, who is the one? Like, who is the one in that kind of pack? Like, Marrow is getting back to a little bit of form. Like, when you're looking at, I know it's difficult because you're a consultant now, but there's some quality players, right? There's some power athlete. Ben Earl's obviously coming through. He's brilliant. Roots was good at the week. I don't think he was man of the match, but he was good. And Marrow's still in the team. Jamie's captain. Marla's playing. Genji's getting back from injury. Like, is there anyone that we should be talking about? Like, who's leading the charge in that pack? Who are the ones?
I mean, what? Ethan got man of the match at the weekend, didn't he?
So, yeah.
I mean, he's got a lot of fight about him.
Yeah, well, he used to be a fighter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I didn't realise that.
Interesting story. I think he'll be good for England going forward.
You think he could be in there long term?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. He's a big boy as well.
He's a bull. Yeah.
You know, you're also missing Curry, Genj, and so on.
Yeah.
So I had a bit more there. But like, they're at a point where they've had a bit of transition post World Cup, which is very natural for people to retire. And yeah, they'll be sussing out who's going to be the next one. I think. Lucky with, like, someone like Ben Earl coming through is, you know, from where he was a couple of years ago to where he is now, and he just looks so full of confidence, and he's a proper player in terms of statistically wise. Like you look at what he puts out, his output on the field, and meters per carry, and all those sort of things. It's, you know, turnovers. He's a very strong player, and a player you can sort of continue to build stuff around. So, yeah, I'd say they've got a nice balance of old and new in that squad. And yeah, like it makes for a proper exciting game on the weekend, as you said there, Younger. Like it's, and especially with the Wales, the two packs, like they've always, I remember coming on Millennium Stadium, you know, always scrapped and always sort of like inside that pack battle was like ferocious.
Well, the 2-7s, like I'm a massive fan of Sam Underhill, fan. Not just me, I asked Sia Khaleesi, I don't know if we got it on camera, but I said to Sia, like, who are the best, but you know, like, yes, these headline questions, like, right, who's the best player you've played against, and who do you think, like, the best players in the world are right now? He mentioned Sam Underhill. This was before Racing went to Bath to play. If Sam wasn't playing, he was injured. He got man of the match, didn't he? Not that it matters about man of the match, because you get random people choosing him, but he got man of the match in the third place playoff.
I'm with you, Jim. Unders is a phenomenal, phenomenal seven. And if I was to name one of the best team I've ever played with, he would be in it.
Really?
I love the way he plays. I just think he's class.
Yeah.
But I think coming back to the England stuff as well, just briefly about the pack, is one of the reasons I think they're talking about this expansive game moving is, if you look at it, we're not blessed with ball carriers. So it was nice to see Roots have a bit of dynamism.
Yeah, yeah.
Benny Earl is obviously a dynamic carrier.
In a different way,
right? But he's great in like wide channels and moving the ball. So this is what I mean. You look at the tight five, not blessed with ball carriers in the tight five. If, you know, if Genji plays, you are. You've got one. They're not like, you know, not going to run through brick walls. Yes, they'll carry and they'll, you know.
But they're not like a McCarthy at the weekend.
So, and I think this is why England at the moment is this why I'm intrigued, because you look at it and you think, that's your team. So do you pick a team that wants to maul, brawl, kick, scrap for everything, play this pressure game? Or the team's probably not suited for that, right?
That's why
I think you have to expand it, and that's why I think that they're going to have to move it more, be a bit more, move away the point of contact, get to edges, go a bit more in phase. Like Scotland, they're not blessed with ball carriers, right? So they play this game and it suits them. Ireland aren't blessed with ball carriers, but what they have now got is this shape. They have got ball carriers, so I'll correct that, but their shape's so good and tight and their breakdown's so good that actually the guys that maybe don't carry as well get better carries, because they're getting little holes and they've got speed of ball and the defence can't come at them. So, as I say, I think, yeah. And this weekend is Wales equally aren't probably going to beat you up physically as a pack. You know, they're going to fly in, but, you know, it's not like playing France. And I think when England play against these big teams, that's when it'll be really interesting. Have we got, which we play later on in the tournament, you know, how much has our attack evolved
so
that we can actually manipulate?
Yeah, of course.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah. Is we play Ireland, I think France, last two games, is has our attack expanded? And that's when we can really look at England and go, right, they've evolved and they're moving the ball. Because like I say, we've got carriers, but we haven't got abundance of carriers.
Let's wrap this up. Cruz, I'll go with you first. What does success look like for your England team as consultant? And then who do you, I know you're not watching huge as amount of rugby at the minute. Are you watching all of them or not?
I've watched all of them.
Like, do you nail it down? Oh, you do? Okay. So you can pass opinion. One of the best I've ever done it. Like, who do you think is going to go all the way, if not England?
England, firstly.
Yeah.
I actually do believe that. I think we've got a good team. And you weren't looking for scores this weekend?
No, we don't want to play. Who cares if the scores? 6-3 still be a classic.
I reckon it will be England. It will be France, and then it will be Ireland.
You think Ireland are going to struggle third?
No, I thought you were talking about games this weekend. Who wins it?
Oh, okay. Sorry, you're naming down.
I was about to say, is he all right?
He's going. So you think? So you think France beat Scotland?
Yeah, and I feel all right. Ireland beat Italy.
I'm going to put it out there before you go, and this might come back to bite me.
Yep.
I think France are struggling. I think France struggle this Six Nations. Mm-hmm. If they lose to Scotland, and there's a good chance that they do.
No, I think they do.
I think.
Do you not think there'll be a bit of a, some sort of like, you know that?
You never know that.
I think they've got them. They're the Latinos, aren't they? They don't travel well. Yeah. There's no Dupont. He, by far, is their best player. Yeah, I don't know. I know they got a red card. Paul Williams had got two yellow cards, a red card.
I think that did more damage than what people give.
Yeah, I don't know. And Ireland was so good, but I did the same as you. I'm watching the energy and the way that they've rocked up to that game, and it was like, holy shit. I might be wrong.
I think I've gone off that basis that there's going to be a reaction.
Okay.
Scotland come out of the blocks. I'm telling you now. You pick a little scab of France, and I think Scotland win. I do. I agree.
Soft
in
the belly.
I think Scotland win. I think France, everyone's expecting a reaction. You can't guarantee it. You know, Murrayfield's a hard place to go and play. Like, it's tough. And Scotland have pushed France and won, and they're like a bit of a nuisance team for them because of the way they play.
Yeah, so we did really well against them away last year as well. I think we got a red card.
And even in the warm-up game, World Cup warm-up, I think Scotland win that. I do. I think England beat Wales, and I think Ireland put Italy away pretty comfortably. Mm. But I hope I don't want it to be. You know, you want Italy to be competitive.
They are now.
Maybe the emotional high of Ireland at the weekend. You know, maybe they can't reach the same height, so Italy make a game of it. But Ireland win, Scotland win, England win, and at the end of the tournament, if France lose this one, right, England go their last game. French might be absolutely had enough by that point. And you're suddenly going to start to France. It's in Lyon, isn't it? Mm. You're going there and you're doing the job. But look, there's big games coming up for sure. But I think it's a great tournament. I think it's, you know, we're unsure about how England and Wales are potentially going to be come the latter stages. There's a lot of expectation of France. Like, if they don't go right this weekend, I'm not sure where it leaves them. Ireland will be very good. I think Scotland, you know, being at home and obviously coming to that last game, I just think it'll be a great tournament. It's hard to say because some teams we haven't seen enough yet to decide where they'll be in the mix.
Right, let's wrap it up. Give some shout outs, Youngsy, to your show for the love of God,
for the love of rugby, for the love of rugby. New show, myself and Coley, bit of fun, get involved. It's a little journey for us and insightful and humorous and good fun and. Love you to have a listen. And Jim, in fact, would love you to come on at some point.
Come
mate.
On, I'd be honoured to. So where can you find it? Spotify?
Yeah, Spotify, Apple. Sorry. Yeah, Spotify, Apple.
YouTube?
Not on YouTube yet, but
it will be. You need to get going.
We'll be on all platforms, all, you know, download, subscribe, get involved, have a listen, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
You absolutely will enjoy it. Cruiser, you got a podcast coming out, or do you want to chat about four or five just quickly to the millions? Go.
No podcast.
Just a dietary plan.
If you're looking to support your local club and also have some good quality vitamins, head over to 4-5.com.
4-5.com.
Get yourself some vitamins, but also donate one to a club as well.
Yeah, I should have been involved in 4-5. I was 23, but I should have been involved.
4-19, yeah.
4-19. I was at 19, not 23, of course, not a back. Right, that's awesome. Let's wrap it up. See you in a bit. Cheers,
mate.
Legend.